Welcome to Cyberside Chats from Epic, a global legal services provider. Hosted by Jarek Beeson, Chief Information Security Officer at Epic, Cyberside Chats is where professionals come to hear CISO and industry leader insights on the latest news and trends for cybersecurity and privacy in the legal industry.
Welcome to Epic Cyberside Chat, where we are excited to be developing content for and by the legal and privacy industries. You know, there's a lot of cybersecurity content in media, but we believe there is a gap when it comes to the legal industry in specific. And we're seeking to address that with our show. My name is Jarek Beeson, and I'm a Senior Vice President and the Chief Information Security Officer at Epic, and I'll be your host. So for episode 10, we have a special show for you all.
We have Amanda Fennell, or Amanda Fennell on the show. Which one is it, Amanda Fennell or Fennell?
Fennell, but everyone right. likes to say fennel because it's spicy, right? It's the spice.
Very true, very true. And as a chef, I should know better than that. All right. We have Amanda Fennell on the show, and we're just going to have a little bit of CISO to CISO chat. And we're going to talk about the White House Cyber Summit that took place last month. This is September when we're recording this. Amanda, just a little bit about her. She joined Relativity in 2018 as the CISO, and her responsibilities expanded quickly into the CIO role in 2021. In her role, Amanda is responsible for championing and directing security strategy and risk management and compliance practices, as well as building and supporting Relativity's information technology. She also hosts Relativity's Security Sandbox podcast, a fellow podcaster on. Happy to see that. And she is looking to explore and explain the unique links between non-security topics and the security realm. Relativity is passionate about its culture of security to ensure its data and its customers and partners' data is secure, and Amanda champions that. Prior to joining Relativity, Amanda served as the Global Head of Cyber Response and Digital Forensics at Zurich Insurance Company. She also held several management and consulting positions at Symantec, Dell SecureWorks, Booz Allen Hamilton, and Guidance Software. Amanda received her master's in forensic science in the field of digital forensics, high technology crime investigation at the George Washington University. That was a mouthful. Amanda, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. You missed one thing that's not made its way into my bio, but it's so relevant for you. I'm also in culinary school, so also very much on the chef track.
Ah, yeah, I am very much so an amateur chef, and my wife just says I put things together that shouldn't be together, and sometimes they turn out well.
That's how it works in security, too, so it's the same.
Agreed, agreed. You know, this is a long time coming. We wanted to have this conversation shortly after the summit, and weather had different plans for us, so I'm glad we were actually able to make this happen.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we had a hurricane in New Orleans, so everything got pushed back for us a little bit.
As someone that lives in Houston, I can understand what happens when water falls from the sky and things don't work out.
Yep.
All right. So let's just hop right in. And by the way, for our listeners, there is a fact sheet from the whitehouse.gov that talks about the Cyber Summit. It's going to be in the show notes. I definitely encourage you guys to go and take a look at it. So President Biden met with the private sector and education leaders to discuss the nation's challenges with cybersecurity. And a number of large organizations and educational institutions were present. Google, Amazon, Microsoft, I think PG&E, JPMorgan Chase, Apple, and that's just a few. This was a huge deal. Nothing like this had ever happened before. It's the first time industry giants like this have all come to the table with the government in this capacity to try to tackle cybersecurity. So I'm curious, what is your take on what happened back then?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually don't feel like it's the first time people have come together. This is the first time. So here we go. Like automatically, we're going to like start it out. Let's duke this out. So I feel like we try every once in a while to do this. And maybe this is the bit jaded cyber person in me that I'm like, oh, this sounds familiar. A whole bunch of people are going to come together and say they're going to do something for betterment. And then it kind of falls flat. And then we get reinvented and they try it in a different way under a different name, et cetera. So I think that people try these things, these initiatives. This one feels like it's going to be potentially different. I'm cautiously optimistic. It's a new initiative that's really going to be about how it's implemented and to what extent it's going to get buy-in from both sides of parties at this point. After something like 9/11, collaboration with the public and private sector and everyone else was super great. Everyone came together. I don't feel like there's been as compelling of an event such as 9/11 in the cyber realm, because there have been so many events that didn't lead to this. You know, Anthem, Target, you know, all of these, you know, huge breaches that have taken place, and with the government and a lot of the different, you know, upticks in attacks and so on for state sponsored activity. It hasn't seemed like there's been a 9/11 in the cyber realm. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I feel like it's something that's been coming together before.
It's interesting that you use the phrase cautiously optimistic. Every CISO that I've had a conversation with about this, we all kind of have that same sentiment. You're probably going to see that throughout this entirety of this conversation for the listeners that are out there. You know, you make a good point around, we've been seeing cybersecurity attacks and issues for years. I think this is one of the first times that the kinetic impact was actually felt among so many. And fortunately, it's only a few days, but we know that if the intent of the attackers was different and they didn't just want money and they wanted to destroy the systems or something along those lines, they could have. Yeah. So it's given us a window into what another nation state might do should they decide to wage war against us potentially or something along those lines.
I mean, look back at something like an advanced attack. If you look at something like Dragonfly, has been around for how long, right? Going after electricity and other different natural resources and power grids. This is state-sponsored activity that took place, I don't even remember, it was when I was at Symantec. So it's been like a hot minute. That's like 10 years ago. So this is something that's happened often. And we have things like the pipeline going down and different things that happen with gas and natural resources. We've had attacks taking place, and we haven't woken up sooner in terms of coming together in all these different areas. We're absolutely all under attack. And we're absolutely not doing everything you can to link arms and become that impenetrable force. I don't even know how that would look if we were to actually all wake up like that post 9/11 morning and say, okay, we're all going to band together. Like, I couldn't even imagine what a world that would be. That would be when the cautious optimism becomes just full on optimistic.
I can appreciate that. I will say this before we hop in. There's one thing that we have proven we'll go to war over, and that's oil. Gas is really close to oil, so that may be part of the conversation.
Yeah, that's very true.
So there were a lot of outcomes from this meeting and a lot of declarations and commitments that were being made, and we're only going to be able to go through a few of them. I'll start off with the first one, and maybe we'll just go back and forth on it. The Biden administration, they announced that the National Institute of Standards and Technology, many of us know them as NIST, said they would collaborate with industry and other partners to develop a new framework to improve the security and integrity of the technology supply chain. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, just what we needed, right? A new framework? That sounds great. Let's add that on. You know, I think it comes down to like this, the parties need to work well with each other and get past any of the party divisions that there are in order for something like this to take place and be effective. So what level of information and visibility that's going to be provided is something to be seen. In a lot of ways, like critical infrastructure, like we were talking about, it might be even less likely they're going to share that information that would actually be super helpful. But I'm guessing you saw they were talking about having to report breaches becoming something they're going to update those timelines now for each state, and they're going to get a little more focused on it. This kind of a punishment, for lack of a better word, in the punitive realm might be something that could help to spur this along a little bit. A little bit of transparency will go a long way. And one of the commitments I think I'm excited about comes from Biden's executive order specifically about cybersecurity, about intelligence and sharing across groups. This is going to be the area that could actually increase membership in those threat intelligence sharing organizations. And that would help us to connect a lot of dots with telemetry that we don't have. You know, we try in so many different ways at Relativity or Microsoft, these different realms, any of the places that you're at, telemetry is everything. Knowing more means you can prevent better. I think this could be the area that actually really helps. But this leads me into, if we're going to go back and forth, can I toss one at you?
Sure. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do this. So if we're going to go back for this one, let's talk about the Apple one. So Apple announced it's going to establish a new program to drive continuous security improvements through the technology supply chain. So buzzy when we see supply chain, right? Like anytime we see it, and the reason why, the same reason anything becomes a buzzword, it hasn't gotten better. It's still a big problem. People have not solved this. So what do you feel about this area?
Yeah, I think this one's very much so tied to what the NIST organization is looking to accomplish. We're trying to figure out how to make sure that the people we do business with aren't going to result, you know, the way they do business and any of their deficiencies and issues don't result in a larger, more catastrophic consequence downstream for their customers and partners. And, you know, Apple's, what they said they're going to do, they're going to make sure that there's MFA, security training, vulnerability remediation, event logging, and incident response. These are the bare minimum fundamentals. It's actually kind of concerning that that is where the bar is at this point, right? So the fact that Apple is saying that they're going to drive things like multi-factor authentication.
Yeah.
You know, if you go look at what the government is trying to do with DFARS or CMMC, it's pretty similar in that they're trying to force the fundamentals upon companies. And for the most part, the idea is good. It's spot on, but it really comes down to enforcement. If we can't enforce these things, then they're just going to be really, really nice suggestions. And I don't necessarily see the needle moving. The other thing that's interesting is you brought up the executive order, and I like that you use the word transparency. The concept of an SBOM was introduced, which is a software bill of materials. And for those that aren't technical, think of it as a ingredient list for your products so people can see exactly what's inside of them. And that's important because a lot of people are using software and using code that they didn't develop. All that to be said, people really want to know what they're acquiring, what they are, what risks they are accepting when they decide to do business with somebody. I just don't know that people are going to be compelled enough to actually do it unless the buyer uses their pocketbook to influence that.
You know, this is another area I think you and I have different perspectives on. This is awesome. So
I like it.
I have a hard time with enforcement because I feel like do it because I told you so or else is like difficult to deal with. And it causes almost like a power dynamic between you and your customer or so on. But you're right that adoption can be painfully slow for something whenever it's going to make things slower, more difficult, not as accessible. A great example, we actually have two-factor authentication and MFA for Relativity, but we can't do it by default. Because customers flip out. So we have to do these big campaigns, like security awareness campaigns, to convince everyone, please use this feature. It's for your benefit to reduce your risk of something bad happening. This is super important. You put something super confidential, data that's really sensitive into this. You should obviously take all of the steps to protect it. And where I think we do align is secure by default. If you can do it by default, it's going to take that punitive dynamic away. Do it in enforcement as opposed, it just eliminates the whole dynamic of that. And you can just do it by default so that less people can make the mistakes.
I agree with you. First, I like that we have differing opinions. I think that the listeners benefit from different perspectives. So talking about enforcement, I think enforcement is not easily done, which is why CMMC and so many other frameworks don't necessarily have certifying bodies that are ensuring, and a lot of it is self-attestation. But if you look at the starting point for most security organizations, it was Sarbanes-Oxley. And that is why a lot of organizations ever even attempted to try to do something from a security perspective is because SOX told them to. And compliance up until, I want to say maybe 10 years ago, was considered the gold standard for security. We now recognize that security may equal compliance, but compliance will almost never equal security. So yes, enforcement will force people to, well, force, it'll entice people to operate within the bounds of whatever is being enforced, and they won't try to do anything more. And if that is the reason why you do something, you will find all the loopholes, you will find all of the gaps and all of the reasons not to do something because it needs to be done versus, you know, because you want to do it. There's two sides of the coin there. I also think that enforcement creates an adversarial relationship between whomever the enforcer is and the organization. And people will start trying to hide things, and people will start trying to avoid some of these certification bodies. So it's going to be a tough one. And like the last thing I'll say on that is if we enforce something, it requires a standard. In the U.S. government, standards take maybe 2 years to develop, another year to go through revisions, and then 2 years before you ever try to enforce it because you got to give people time to adopt it. And by that time, whatever was written in that standard is outdated and doesn't align with the threats that we're facing. So
we know for a fact how slow things are. Cloud first directive was December 2010. It is now September 2021, and it's still like 28% of a lot of the agencies have moved their data into the cloud. So even just with looking at that trend, enforcement and rolling something out and adoption, it is not just slow, it is historically painful on how long it takes for something to take place.
Yeah, and you know what, this is has to be said, if the legal industry has anything to say about it, it'll be even slower. The legal industry is really risk adverse. I see some changes in that. But I can't tell you how many times when I talk to the CISO organization, they say, yes, move it to the cloud, or yes, you can do two-factor. Yeah. But when I talk to the actual users, you know, the legal community, that's just not what they're familiar with. So, you know, people want to do things the way they've always done them.
Oh, this is like a whole nother podcast episode, but it is why it's important to do a session like today or to have these conversations, is that it is getting some of that thought leadership out there. Whether you agree or disagree with either one of us, this is the topic that should be discussed in the legal tech industry for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Google, they announced that they are going to invest $10 billion. I'm doing my Dr. Evil pinky in my mouth, over the next 5 years to expand zero trust programs, help secure the software supply chain, and enhance open source security. What say you about that?
I'm happy. This is like a happy smile, but you know, seeing Google invest in zero trust, given the immense usage of their web tools and browsers by everyday users, is just super important. And better securing these items is going to have greater effects for the larger cybersecurity ecosystem. So it's a great area to be doing this, but it does require continuous verification of what this operationally looks like in real time. And I think it's quite an endeavor. There's probably the reason why there's so many zeros after that 10, is because this is not an easy thing to bite off. Providing users just like the bare minimum of access that they would need to accomplish the mission. I mean, we refer to this in the CISO realm as the role of least privileges and access and so on. We don't want to give anyone access to something for any more of the time than they need it, and at the minimum of whatever the information that they would need. And this is just going to continue to be a concern in the remote workforce. So a lot of endpoints are out there. There is no traditional perimeter. I don't have a castle and a fiefdom and, you know, a moat around it anymore. And Google's behind a lot of that distribution. So, you know, I think we talk about buzzwords in some of our conversations. We've invested in Zscaler for our zero trust solution, and architecture isn't really an option anymore to be zero trust. It's a requirement. So it's great when you see these large giants say, we're doing this, we're making this the bar, we're investing a lot in it. That's all wonderful. Does go back a little bit to what you said about like this is the bar. And I guess I think they've been doing it for some time, and now they're just making it formal. They're putting a ring on it. Like they're saying, okay, we're definitely doing this. We want to make sure everybody's aware of it. But I do think it's been going on behind the scenes for a long time.
I agree. And it's interesting that Google is the company that's saying this, because a little bit of a history lesson for those that are not in security, there was a project called BeyondCorp. And BeyondCorp put out these white papers, and it was in many ways the start of the zero trust movement. Now, Google spent, I heard, over $1 billion to deploy it, and it took them around 10 years to do, which is just not feasible and out of reach for almost every organization that is seeking to do zero trust. But I do highly recommend you read those white papers if you haven't. Countless vendors are trying to recreate what Google, you know, did in those white papers. Now, here's the thing about that.
This is back from the Aurora stuff, though, right? Like when they did the big Aurora research and everything in 2009, but implementation here again, 2021. But okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's true. Aurora was the impetus for the BeyondCorp architecture because they realized what they were doing, it just wasn't working anymore. And they needed to pivot to address, you know, the way the threats are happening. And, you know, they got rid of firewalls. I mean, they did a lot of things that most companies are just not ready to do. But what I want Google to do is I want them to provide more of the secret sauce for how they did some of that, right? They gave you some information. They said, hey, we have, you know, application proxies and we have a trust engine. And they gave about four different things they look for in that trust engine. But from what I hear, there's about 100, right? And I tried to do it myself and I came up with maybe 30, right? So just providing some information as, you know, what is the context that you're taking in? What are the data sources that you're ingesting to make decisions on trust? Don't force all of us to figure it out ourselves because we're going to fail. We clearly have. We don't have the resources that Google has. We don't have the trial and error opportunities that Google has. And we can't literally build a brand new network from scratch and pay the billions of dollars that they spent to do it. If they're going to help secure supply chains, if they're going to help, you know, deploy zero trust, then maybe they can provide some of that information as well.
I think it's the onus is on a lot of different companies that are product companies. I don't think it's just Google. So like that was the whole reason we did like a threat intelligence feed and we did it for free. And like we did, you know, logging and stuff for monitoring detection. We did it for free. But like I look at my team now and I'm like, OK, so what are we looking at if it's going to be scanning on certain types of containers or something? Open source it. It's not fair. And like, I also wanted to send out a lot of mistakes that we learned on this bumpy path of finding out the right, you know, program for things like logging, which is such a, you know, heartache for so many people. And I wanted to like start putting this stuff out there because it is painful to have other people going through the same exact mistakes and falling on the same hills. It would be awesome if Google would do that. It'd be awesome if more people would do it. Even in my interactions of speaking with some of these people off record, they still don't give it up. And I'm pretty good. Like I worked in the government for a hot minute. I'm pretty good at getting something from somebody, but they're still not giving it up. And I think that there's some areas that we could really appreciate different ways of doing supply chain and DevSecOps and different ways the products could implement these security tooling inside of it naturally. And that default stuff we're talking about, we're having to move forward so quickly here, and we're just having to hope that we have the brightest minds that are doing it because we're trying to be creative. But we don't have a whole lot of information. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, and this goes back to transparency. I am a firm believer that we are not transparent enough in the industry, and we're not sharing our information freely. You guys are doing the free Fed feed. We're doing this podcast and we're not bringing on any, you know, advertisers. We're not talking about what our company does. This isn't an opportunity for us to showcase our companies, but more so to contribute to an industry that sorely needs it. And we are trying.
That's the next question then. I'm going to lob this one over to you. Talk about transparency and giving back to an industry. IBM announced that they're going to train 150,000 people in cybersecurity skills over the next 3 years. They're going to partner with more than 20 historically Black colleges and universities to establish cybersecurity leadership centers to grow a more diverse cyber workforce. Thoughts on this one?
All right. So I learned when you're going to deliver news that may be bad, you should use the sandwich approach. So I'm going to start off with something positive, and then I'm going to give some critique and then something positive at the end. First, I love this. I love the idea that they're going to partner with colleges, that they're going to close the talent gap and in turn close the diversity gap by working with some of these minority colleges. I have to say, though, I'm fairly active on LinkedIn, and there are thousands of people trying to break in who are already trained, and they haven't been given a chance. So I hope this training translates to jobs and not just within IBM. Is this a self-serving thing? Do they plan on hiring that many people to address a gap in the cyber arena from a sales perspective? Or are they trying to train people and then send them off to other organizations? Do they plan on charging people, right? Is this a revenue opportunity, or is this a we are truly giving back? I'm interested in understanding that, because we need more experienced cyber people, not just trained ones, and people aren't going to get that experience unless they're given it. Now, what I will also say on a positive note is, you know what, we have a need. And if they're going to train 150,000 people, at the end of the day, we'll be 150,000 people smarter, 150,000 people stronger, and our cyber workforce isn't where it needs to be. It is out. It is underpaced by the threats. And if you look at some of the things that are happening, you know, in some of the Eastern countries, we are not moving fast enough. So I'm hoping to see more companies do some of what IBM is doing in developing, you know, cyber skills, hopefully starting K through 12, not just finding people in college, but let's start early. Let's get this career in people's, you know, view. You know, when you are really smart, you're told to be a doctor, an engineer, or a lawyer. How about a cyber person? Because we can also make a good living, but we can also do really good in the world as well.
So I think that the earlier age is where I like to also look. So I agree with this one about it. We're already too late. I mean, by the time I was 18, I already knew I wanted to be an archaeologist. Come on, that's exactly right. Or, you know, whatever it is that you wanted to be. 18, you've kind of already got your idea on something. We do need to get cyber in front of younger kids and make sure that it is normalized in their, you know, lexicon, that's a normal thing, that they understand what it is. However, so this is kind of the area that I am concerned about. We have a program at Relativity Fellows, and this is an area that we definitely focus on and making sure people get jobs in it, you know, after being trained and exposed to it. But one of the things that I think would be helpful with something like this is accountability. So like Microsoft does things in terms of like sustainability reports, and they put this stuff out there, which is exactly what you should be doing in ESG and getting this information out about how you're doing something socially, environmentally, governance wise, getting the reports out there, being clear about what you're trying to say. We're going to be carbon neutral by this date, et cetera. They're accountable for that now, and they annually report on it. That is what should be done for something like this. You can say you're going to do something, but how do we know what the gap is? What are you starting with? Is the IBM gap, like, where is it? What are we starting as a baseline? We don't know. And then we'll probably not hear about this again for like 5 years or something, right? Until somebody will say, hey, remember when IBM said they were going to do this? I would just like to see some kind of accountability. And as you said, the buzzword earlier of transparency, let's put that in place.
Yeah, you know, I want up that. I think every Fortune 500 company should have some level of commitment to addressing cybersecurity gaps, and not just in doing the part to protect their organizations, but to help the, you know, the rest of our country and all of our assets that are out there.
Mm, I agree with that one.
I'm loving this chat, by the way.
I know. Thank you.
I need to do this more often. All right. Think you have the last question. So Amazon announced that they will make it their security awareness training available to all of their customers, including providing free two-factor authentication hardware, dongles or something like that. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something that, you know, it's interesting. It sounds exciting, but I know that you are a heavy Microsoft shop, right? Yeah. So, yeah. So what
doesn't
does that mean
I
for
can't
you?
Like Amazon. I'm an equal.
But you may not be a customer. You may not be a customer. So, curious.
You know, it sounds great on paper. Oh, I really should implement your sandwich concept here. So, like, it sounds great on paper. It's just going to come down to adoption by the everyday public. I don't think the everyday public has any idea what security awareness is or why they would even do any of this stuff. So this is kind of like, you know, I'm a chef, but the food I make is mediocre, and telling people I'm in New Orleans and I'm going to give it to you for free. Like, then why would anybody care? Like, I'm just something mediocre. So if they don't even know the value of something, it's really hard for them to really want it. So I think it's just going to be one of those things about how are you going to drive adoption? Because I do believe that consistent education, training, good tech, these are the vital things for your employees and your people in your life to make sure you have good security. This idea of like everyone being a warrior that is trying to protect your personal data in your home life and your kids when they're on Zoom or something. Like, I absolutely believe this kind of training is one of the most important things you can do for anyone to be a holistic human being. I just don't know how you're going to drive adoption. And I just don't know how you're going to get them to be aware of how useful this information is. But I'm absolutely going to look at it when it's out there.
So I did a little bit of a search online, and I was able to find about 25 people, I'm pretty sure there are more, that have the title Security Awareness at Amazon. Mm. You are hard-pressed to find any organization that has 25 people dedicated to security awareness. So I'm assuming that the quality of the content is there.
I posit the opposite, though. I have 1,400 people dedicated to security awareness. Everyone is dedicated to security awareness.
Fair enough. Security is everybody's responsibility. I'm more so thinking about the people developing content, developing the gamification, developing all those things. And that doesn't mean that people within the different business units can't do the same thing. But ultimately, the people who wake up every single day and the entirety of their job is spent, how do we educate? How do we change behavior from, when it comes to security? And how do we measure those outcomes? And how do we continuously move the needle to the right when it comes to educating, engaging, preparing, and equipping our people to face cyber threats?
It's quite a machine for 25. And I got to say that, we had people who were dedicated that was the full-time job as well a few years ago. And I got to say, it gets real automated real fast. If you drive yourself in terms of getting a lot of that content created, you become quite a machine to do it. And it's just like any industry, you get it kind of down pat and then it becomes automated. And then the really only thing you need to do is make sure it is evergreen and refreshing that, like you said, moving the needle. But I bet you'll be hard pressed to see 25 people still doing that job 3 years from now at Amazon. I bet you it's half as much because they automated a whole bunch of it.
I'm a skeptic when it comes to how much security awareness can actually protect an organization. I believe humans are the first line of defense, and I believe that humans are going to be your human firewall and that they're going to detect things and that you can decrease the click rate and all of that, right? But it only takes one click, right? That's what we always say. And you're never going to get, your percentage down to zero. Now, what you can do is decrease the work on your SOC and your other teams by not creating, a bunch of noise. All that to be said, I do believe that we need to be able to manage the human risk. I think that and I'm just assuming what Amazon has with the amount of people, maybe they have, business unit specific training. Maybe they can give me specific training on how to train my finance people.
We do specific too. Training. We did all of this. Yeah. I mean, like, this is what you do. You immediately say, okay, for your role in this business, how would you need to know about security and to what depth? And then we did different levels of it. Like, it is a thing, but I totally think that there is absolutely data from our own records to say that implementing the security awareness training and all of those different aspects of it, the percentage of something like a phish simulation, it went down like 40% in the first 3 months once we roll everything out. 40%. So yes, humans can be just one click away, but there's still an amazing firewall when you say human firewall. That is an awesome amount of reducing my risk on my surface attack.
Agree, but eventually you plateau. And there is a point of diminishing returns. I've never seen a company go down to 0%. If it's possible, maybe. And maybe you're going to say, we went down to 0%. And I'd love to hear that story if you went down to 0%.
There is one caveat. We are actually, for hook rates, that's true. And we do plateau with them. But there is a caveat. New joiners. We can't get them down to zero until they've done all their security training. And we always still fish people their first week before the security training. So it is a caveat. There's pockets.
And I'm also more interested in the report rate than the click rate, to be completely honest, as
over
well.
Over 75%. I know. And it's high.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, humans, we're prone to error, right? I mean, everything is going to err at some point in time. And it sounds like, and once again, I love that we can have this debate, and maybe you've built something that I need to learn from. And I think that's actually very much so the case. We all can learn from each other as well. Personally, with my own eyes, never seen a company where there is no human error. Human error is going to exist at some point in time. You can only train away so much of that.
It's funny because every time in engineering for the last, 10 years of my life, 10, 15 years, anytime something happens, you know, you look at like the AAR or whatever the root cause analysis might be and so on of something. And anytime I've ever seen that it says human error on it, I'm like, that's not the answer. And everyone always looks at me like, what do you mean? I'm like, that can't be the answer because humans will always be in this mix. And so if you're saying that's your answer, then you're conceding defeat, that we will screw up again and again and again. So you have to eliminate the human possibility being the root cause. And the best way to do that is to remove the opportunity. So yes, we use the tools to eliminate the opportunity and the reduction of something with emails and filtering and things like that. And there's all the process in place and the automation that's in place for all of it. Because as much as I am so driven at the human aspect of it, I do agree with you that there is still the potential for the error. And my job is to reduce that risk as much as possible.
I 100% agree. My job is to reduce that risk as much as possible, but have a contingency when that risk becomes realized.
Yeah, plan for the worst, right?
That's the whole concept of zero trust, right? Assume breach.
That's right.
Well, we have come to the end of our show. This was jam-packed. It went in directions I did not expect it to go, which is always an awesome thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming to the show. Do you have any parting words for our listeners?
I do always like to end my podcast on a quote. I'm going to end on one. I don't know why I feel like a human, like encyclopedia of quotes that come to mind after we have content like this, but we did go in a lot of different ways. And I think if we go back to thinking, you know, the executive order, what these different companies are trying to come together to do, it does remind me of something. And it is a Vince Lombardi one. And it is individual commitment to a group effort. That is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, and a civilization work. That's what I think we see trying to happen here. And I'm still cautiously optimistic, but that second word is the important one. It is optimism. I do hope that that's what's happening here.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for that. That is a perfect end to the show. And I guess I'll throw a quote in as well, given that it's football season. We are in a cyber war. And Al Davis of the Raiders is known for saying, just win, baby. Just win. And we're trying to win. Thanks, Amanda. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. This was awesome. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today. If you have any questions or ideas from today's show, share them with us by emailing cyberside@epicglobal.com. Don't forget to follow us on socials. You can find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram by searching for Epic Global. Until next time, stay cyber smart.